It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
That's right. We're live from the Freedom's Phoenix studios, except that this is Barry Hess sitting in for the vacationing Ernest Hancock, who's currently up in Canada beating baby seals or something. We don't know exactly what he's doing. Everything is kept under wraps. His new job at the CIA, I don't know. How did he get that? But in any event, folks, no, we're back here on Declare Your Independence. And that's what it's really all about. It's taking a slightly cynical view of the world, but not really. It's certainly not undeserved. I know in the recording they just played in the bumper, they were talking about it's been 100 years we're fighting machines. Well, here in America, it's been about 230 years, and they're not machines. That would be to disparage machines, realistically. So it's really kind of an interesting thing. We're talking about the fallibility of human beings who think they have power over others. And therein lies the root of the corruptions that we face. Here in America, probably one of the most corrupt governments on earth. Or at least it's probably the most corrupt government that hides it, and it hides it well sometimes, or at least it hides it behind rhetoric. I know I was reading this morning about our good friend Charles Rangel, one of the congressional representatives, one of your honest machines, one of these infallible super beings who knows better how to run your life than you do, at least according to him. And here he is, the head of the Committee on Finances, and you know, he's lying about his income tax. Wouldn't it be better just to change the income tax code? That would certainly make a whole lot of sense to me, rather than have it create criminals left and right. Well, it's the old Jimmy Swaggart syndrome. That's what we're dealing with. You know, the do as I say, but don't watch me too close. Of course, don't get real stupid like our good friend Jimmy Swaggart, one of the greatest preachers of all time, but he was very fallible. And unfortunately, the thing that he screamed about the most that you shouldn't do is what he did. See, that's the Jimmy Swaggart syndrome. It's the I am holier than thou. I am allowed. It's not to make a mistake because they know what they're doing. There's no mistake about it. They're just doing what they think they should be doing. You know, the laws don't apply to them. The Social Security doesn't apply to them. The taxes don't apply to them. I mean, why should anything else apply to them, morals or anything else? Well, folks, today on the show, we have a couple of exciting guests. One is my good friend up from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. That's Vin Saprinowitz. Now, I know you've heard that name because old Vin has been around. He's an incredibly good speaker. He's an author. He wrote The Libertarian. It's a newsletter that was syndicated. He is, of course, the editor of the paper up in the major paper up in Las Vegas. A very well-reasoned man who helps us think clearly. And we'll find out what he's got to say in just a little bit, right after the first break. We're going to go and find Vin, and we'll be back for you to give you some real good entertainment. The second hour, we're going to have Nick Coons, a congressional representative or candidate as a libertarian here in Arizona. You're going to love the show, so we'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, I made it as a singer in another life. Oh, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is Barry Hess sitting in for the vacationing Ernest Hancock. And today on our show, we have an incredible person, somebody I certainly have respected for a very long time, and someone who my wife thinks gave one of the funniest, best-received speeches that I could possibly remember down in Pennsylvania several years back. His name is Vin Soprinowicz. He's an author. He was the writer of the Libertarian Newsletter, went out across the globe to free-minded people. He is also the editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, or Journal Review. I keep confusing those. I hope I didn't screw it up too bad. But without further ado, let's get right to him. I understand he is on the line. Ladies and gentlemen, our good friend, Vin Soprinowicz. Vin, are you with us?
I seem to be here.
Hey, Vin, how are you?
Pretty good. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning. You know what? I always go through the newspapers first thing in the morning. And I just see all the different articles and the headlines and the propaganda and stuff. And, of course, you're right in the thick of it. What did you see today? And I know you have. What did you see today that struck you as just a little odd, something we should talk about? How about my friend?
That's an open-ended question.
How about Charles Rangel, the guy who's responsible for making sure that you pay all of your taxes, or what they say are your taxes, and then he forgot, I guess, that he earned another $1 million for a couple of years.
had a little problem there.
Yeah.
Of course, we've got a Treasury Secretary who forgot to pay some of his taxes. supposedly forgot. He was actually signed a form that says, yes, I understand I'm getting this extra check to pay taxes, and then he didn't pay them. So this is becoming increasingly common in Washington, and I love the excuse. It's always, it's so complicated, no one could keep track of it. That's what we hire accountants for. It's their problem. Well, of course, who creates the laws that are so complicated that it's hard for anybody to keep track of them?
And you know, they never give that excuse to the common man, do they?
Well, you don't get the benefit of the doubt if you owe the money. It's pay us what we say you owe plus penalties. I remember talking to a tax accountant here in Las Vegas some years back, and he said, have you ever been in an IRS office, the waiting room where people wait to go in and deal with, they've been called in, there's supposedly a problem with their taxes. I said, yeah, I guess I have. I don't hang out in such places just for social purposes, but you go in there to pick up a form or something. I've been in there. He says, who do you see in there? I hadn't really thought about it. You see people waiting to, no, come on. He says, you're a trained observer. What kind of people do you see there? I said, I really didn't pay that much attention. He said, you do not see businessmen in suits with their lawyer next to them with the briefcase. They don't like to call those people in because they're armed and prepared with court decisions to tell them how confusing this is, and it's been held, you know, different positions have been taken by different courts. What you tend to see in there are unemployed cocktail waitresses or unmarried cocktail waitresses, because they're the easiest people in the world for the IRS to call in and say, look, you only declared a certain amount of tips. We think you made three times as much. You owe us an extra $1,500. That's a very typical call that the IRS will do to get some extra money out of somebody. And the reason why, and of course they're not all cocktail waitresses, but people in that station in life, the reason why is they say, well, that's outrageous. I declared my tips. You're just making this up out of thin air. What makes you think I should pay you an extra $1,500? And that figure's not random. That's a very common figure. And the reason why is they say, well, if you don't like it, go get a lawyer. And a lawyer will tell them, yeah, we can fight this. Just pay me $3,000. So it becomes the easiest thing to do to pay the IRS what they want.
It's a shakedown.
That's the way they handle the little guy.
It really is, in that the little guy continues to take it over and over. It's just amazing. Because
tax load, the idea that I think they're getting near the edge. They're approaching the crunch. People in Washington, these congressmen, they want to continue, and congresswomen, they want to continue spending money, but they realize they really can't sock it to us with taxes that are very much higher without getting widespread bankruptcies or people just throwing up their hands saying, I'm not paying anymore. And so they're caught. They just have to spend money they don't have and borrow it and hope that the Chinese will keep buying our bonds, which are nothing but promissory notes drawn against our children. it's they're approaching a crisis.
Yeah, I think when in dealing with the IRS, I had a situation some years back, and boy, did I get flummoxed because I started asking questions about the IRS. And at that time, I was literally a cheerleader for the IRS. Now, I'm talking back in the very early, well, late 80s. I thought, of course, everybody has to pay their fair share. Everybody has to join. And I never thought any deeper than that on the tax issue. Well, I came up, and I was one of those really anal people. I would always send my taxes to two different accountants. They did not know each other. And when they came back, I would always pay the higher one because I didn't want to have a red flag next to my name. I mean, I was definitely cowering with the sheep. I started asking questions, and I felt I was secure because I had filed, because I had done it meticulously and really conscientiously. And so I was in a very, I felt a strong position to ask them just simple questions like, who are you? You know, in terms of our relationship, and what does it take to get on your list of people to call and harass or to write? You know, what are the qualifications and, you know, just kind of basic things to see where they were going from? Well, Vin, it was funny because I got audited and they decided they were going to disqualify or disallow all of my Schedule C's. Now, I was self-employed. Your Schedule C's are your schedules of what it costs you to do business. Now, they disallowed all of them. I got a letter from the head of the department because I didn't take it lying down. We went to war. I got a letter from the head of the department. And he, in the body of the letter, he actually says, yes, in Mr. Hess's employment, that there are high deductions. However, we're just going to disallow them all. And they called it negligence. See, they never made an accusation other than that I was negligent and they couldn't show me why. Well, we went back and forth and ultimately I just said, I'd go to hell. I just got sick and tired of them because it was all nonsense. And the minute I got them into a corner, they'd hand off to someone else.
The reason the Constitution tells us that the taxes should either be directly capitated, assigned to the states and everybody pays an equal amount,
mm-hmm.
Not graduated, or else an indirect
transaction,
tax, which is collected as the way you buy automobile tires. There's supposed to be, it's a legal myth that there's some kind of legal privilege that associates with buying automobile tires or with selling them, that you have to go beg the government's permission. But in theory, that's a privileged occupation. The person who sells you the tires has to collect the tax and remit it to the federal government. The government is not allowed to contact you and say, hey, this place where you've been buying your tires for a few years went out of business. Turns out that they didn't pay the taxes to the federal government when they sold the tires, so now you owe it. That's not true. It's an indirect tax. The responsibility to collect it is the tire dealer's, not yours, and you don't have to file a tax return every year telling the IRS how many tires you bought and what you paid. That's supposed to be an indirect levy. Those are the two constitutional types of taxes.
Mm-hmm.
The IRS will contend that a new type of tax was created when they passed the personal income tax constitutional amendment in 1913. People argue about whether it's really a new type of tax or whether they should be collecting it one of those two constitutional ways. But there's a reason why the founders didn't want to put the average man in a position where he was on the defense of having to prove to the government how much he spent for lunches last year and whether they were business lunches and whether they were tax deductible. Of course, poor people tend not to have a lot of sympathy for rich guys who are trying to make these deductions. But they have purposely created a system where you can't prove you're innocent. You should never have to prove you're innocent in the first place.
Yeah, I found myself saying, how do I prove I didn't steal something that doesn't exist?
But you asked about what was in the news, Barry. It's like shooting fish in a barrel for editorial writers these days. That's what I do at the Review Journal in Las Vegas, the big daily here in Nevada. I write editorials. We could talk about the Kennedys for a long time, but just take the fact that Senator Ted Kennedy has died, and now the question arises, well, who gets to pick his replacement? Well, most states have a law that the governor names a replacement for a senator who dies
mm-hmm.
during his term until the next regular election. Massachusetts had that law up until 5 years ago. Then something interesting happened. One of their senators, John Kerry, ran for president. And the Democratic legislature in Boston says, wow, if he gets elected and someone has to appoint a replacement for Senator Kerry, it's going to be Mitt Romney, the Republican governor. And he'd probably appoint a Republican. We can't have that. So they changed the law 5 years ago when Kerry was running for president. And the way they changed the law, it now reads there has to be a special election. It's not an appointment by the governor. That was fine when they had a Republican governor, but now they have a Democratic governor. They go, darn, if it was the old way, our current Democratic governor could appoint a replacement. He could go to Washington next week, and we wouldn't lose that 60th vote of Harry Reid's veto-proof majority in the Senate. But now we're stuck with this special election that we set up, and we can't get a senator to replace Ted Kennedy to go to Washington until January, and we'll be a vote short. So now they're scrambling in the Massachusetts legislature to change it back so that the governor, now Democratic governor, can appoint a replacement senator to get there quickly enough to not damage their valuable veto-proof majority. So we editorialized today, come on, stop fooling around. Just pass a law in Massachusetts that when it's a Democratic governor, you make an appointment, and when it's a Republican governor, then there's a special election by the people. You know, stop pretending that you want a consistent policy. They're going to change it every 5 years anyway, depending on who's governor.
Well, and doesn't that make some sense? it is almost like a comedy of errors over and over with these guys. Because
it's like a Marx Brothers movie. I mean, here we've got a new president who swore we were going to get rid of pork, and particularly with this stimulus bill, the $700 billion of pork money that they allocated last, was it January or February? Oh, there'd be no pork involved. Well, now the Associated Press this week goes and looks at the money they've spent on the border posts, fixing up the border posts.
I saw
one
that.
Of the busiest border posts in the country that was a very high priority on the Homeland Security list, 55,000 people going through there every day is Laredo, Texas. Quite a bit further down, Homeland Security said it didn't really need any immediate work or allocation.
Yep.
Was Nogales there in there.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
A little less conversation. Yeah, that's the kind of song you want to play on a radio show. Hi, folks. This is Barry Hess sitting in for the vacationing Ernest Hancock here on Declare Your Independence. Our guest today, Vin Soprenowitz, noted libertarian and a all-around swell guy. Vin, I apologize before we went to the break. I was hoping you would finish your thought before they bumped out. But, boy, network is hard on us, and they just come in and take over the airwaves. And what you were talking about was the pork in the stimulus bill, where the border patrol, the crossings, I think you were talking about Nogales as one of the largest and busiest. Ultimately, they got Zippo. And then what was some of the pork on? I know you were going to get to this as your point, so I'll let you pick it up from there.
Sorry if I talk too long, but I'm glad to get sponsors, Barry. No problem with that.
Yeah, I'll let you know ahead of time here in the future. Sorry.
Now, Laredo was one of the busiest crossings, 55,000 people a year. The Homeland Security thought we should put quite a bit of money in there. But, in fact, a lot of money did go to the Nogales crossing there in Arizona because, of course, Janet Napolitano is now head of Homeland Security. She says it was back when she was governor that she lobbied to get that to near the top of the list. And maybe they needed some money. I think there were some repairs needed. But Laredo, in Texas, primarily a Republican state now, George W. Bush's state, even though it was very high on the list for Homeland Security to get some of that stimulus money. And unemployment down there is 9.4%, so there was the added economic need to create some new jobs down there. They got nothing, zero. However, there are some border crossings up on the Canadian border. We know how many terrorists and how much drugs brought in at places like Whitetail, Montana, where 55 people every day cross the border. That's 55, not 5,500 like down in Laredo, Texas. They got $15 million at Whitetail, Montana, to build the equivalent of a Hollywood mansion. The border post is going to be one of the fanciest we've got anywhere. 55 people a day crossing the border. And apparently that's because Montana, you wouldn't think there'd be any connection. I can't imagine the connection, but they've got two Democratic senators, very powerful senators that sit on the Appropriations Committee, one of them. And so they bragged in their press releases that they were able to use their muscle to get some money for $15 million for Whitetail, Montana. There's also a smaller crossing in North Dakota where Senator Byron Dorgan's powerful senator, a Democrat from North Dakota, where three people per day cross the border there in North Dakota, three. And they also got $15 million.
Yep.
But, of course, President Obama promised there'd be no pork, there'd be no more of that, like we saw under George Bush and the Republicans. It's simply based on the needs as established by Homeland Security to protect this nation's security. That's going to decide where the money goes to these border posts under the stimulus bill.
Well,
as
then,
I say, it's a target-rich environment out there.
Oh, yeah, and they're of course, they're operating on super-secret CIA documentation that said those, you know, Harry Brown's rampaging Canadians were really the big threat to America. You probably didn't get that memo. You're right. It's a target-rich environment. It's almost like the Bill Clinton idea of throwing out all these ridiculous rumors and assertions about him during his campaign simply to cover up the true ones. So they all got buried.
Well, exactly. Rumor overkill, I guess you'd call it. But people fall into a pattern, anybody in Washington who enjoys the power and the wealth they can accrue through the system, that's who I mean by they, they love the fact that we are easily herded into two camps, like the two sides at a soccer game, wearing the two different colored shirts, cheering for our team. And so when you say that the Democrats have done this, the pork spending, the wasteful spending, borrowing money from the Chinese, writing IOUs that our children will probably default on, but theoretically are supposed to pay. People come back and say, oh, the Republicans were just as bad. And if you're a Republican, there's a certain, you get angry and you shout back. The nice thing about being a libertarian is you go, of course they were. It's the Republican Party. It's the two branches of the, they're both the same.
They're both
seeing how much pork they can get for their constituents. Don't expect me to defend one party, one major party against the other. They are all the same.
Exactly. I see zero distinction between them, even in the players. And you know some of the players involved on the big leagues. When you start getting up there in both parties or both delineations of that same party, you find out they're literally working from the same desktop. I mean, it's a big show. It's almost like, who is it, Vince over there at WWE. McMahon, the guy puts on a wonderful show, but I'm thinking they're stealing his stuff in Washington because it's such a show. They say one thing and do completely the opposite, and then people forgive them on an ongoing basis. That's what puzzles me.
I think it's wearing thin, Barry. I don't know how much time you want to spend talking about Ted Kennedy. We could fill up the hour, and maybe that's not appropriate, but it's very interesting. The flashes we were getting, if you're on the AP wire, every half hour yesterday, it was the Kennedy funeral motorcade has left the family compound there in, we don't call them compounds if they're not right-wing gun nuts, the family, whatever it is, in Cape Cod, and now the motorcade has reached some favorite Kennedy taverns that they're driving by in Boston, and now the body's going to lay in state at the John Kennedy Memorial Library. I don't mean to make light of the fact that a man has died who was a husband and a father, and I suppose he was a good man in some ways, although he was a politician.
Yeah.
But for heaven's sakes, it's as though we're ancient Egypt and the pharaoh has died, and everybody, I mean, they tied up the East Coast for days when Robert Kennedy died, and that was a terrible thing.
Yep. I'm sorry, Vin, we're back at the break, but we have we have an 18-minute one right after that. I'll look forward to completing that thought.
Okay.
Thanks.
Why can't you and me learn to love one another?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same.
Yeah.
There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Yeah, unfortunately, folks, when the man comes around, might be the wrong man. This is Barry Hess sitting in for the vacationing Ernest Hancock with our guest, Vin Soprenowitz, and we were just discussing a little bit about the demise of Ted Kennedy, a real scion, I guess, of democracy. as opposed to being Democratic. And you were saying, Vin, you were talking about how the television coverage had just overwhelmed things back there. And I will confess that I just literally did not turn on the TV at all yesterday or the day before. So I got to escape at least part of it.
Well, it's the passing of a lion of the left, and I don't think we'd probably argue that many of our major news media lean towards the left, towards the progressive side. But I think the point here is not so much whether he was a good or bad man. I mean, you can go into Chappaquiddick, and as a young man, he got kicked out of Harvard for cheating. At the very least, the left will admit he had some personal problems. But then to hold him up to cast, you know, you can go into that all you want, but to hold him up as this hero because he was behind the scenes, he did a lot of great work passing many bills that helped the poor and the disenfranchised and the underprivileged in this country. Well, that's always been the rap of the left, that we should be they should be judged on their intentions. They want to help the poor. They want to help. Give medicine to the sick and so forth. Well, look what they've done to the entire health care system in this country. I think there certainly could be some debate about whether the welfare state that grew enormously under Lyndon Johnson and Ted Kennedy was there to help pass Medicare, Medicaid, all that stuff, mm-hmm. whether it has really helped people or just made our health care more expensive and more bureaucratized and actually stood in the way of progress. Why is it that health care costs go up and they're having to ration what you get, whereas a true free market industry, whether it's laptop computers or cell phones, we're continually getting better features, more stuff for less money. That's the way the free market works. And this notion that, oh, the Kennedy health bill is going to create competition because the government's going to go in there and set up an insurance company, and then there'll be four or five independent private insurance companies mandated by the government to offer you the same plan at the same cost, and somehow this is competition. It's like picking between the Donald Duck's three nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Well, of course, there's no profit incentive for anybody to create better services for less under that kind of a plan. But my point was, I think they've run out of steam. I think it's not going to work. I think this notion that a pharaoh has died, he now lies in state before being interred in his pyramid, I don't know, are they going to embalm him like Lenin and we can all go touch him, and walk through the Kennedy Library? Whatever the plan is, it's done for political purposes. You're already seeing people in the Democratic Party saying, well, certainly as a memorial to the last Kennedy brother, we should now pass his health care plan in his honor. This is what they did in 1965. Lyndon Johnson was able to say, because the president, the original President Kennedy, has been martyred, we will now pass everything he wanted, Medicare, Medicaid, whether it really would have been presented in that way by John Kennedy or not, who was a tax cutter.
Yep.
They did it all in the honor of the martyred former president. I don't think it's going to work.
I think
they're just one vote short in the Senate now, and I think people are not going to fall for this. It's been 50 years. They've had enough of this. What, we have to pass more socialism in honor of some dead guy?
I had to laugh when I saw the headlines and Nancy Pelosi up there acting like it was going to be some kind of death benefit for Ted Kennedy to pass it, this health care nonsense in his name and how they took it on. But I agree with you. I think it's not going to work just because the money problems are just so big for people these days. They're looking deeper than into just the rhetoric that these guys come out with. I also wanted to mention, one of the major proponents of the changing the law of how they pick their replacement senators, that was Ted Kennedy. And he was scrambling, apparently, at the end, or at least they said he was. It was just a few days ago. They were saying that he was all over, let's change it back. I would bet you that he was probably not even able to speak the last couple of days. It was somebody from his staff was speaking on his behalf.
They don't do a very good job anymore of pretending that they're enacting laws that are supposed to be fair and equitable for everyone. It's all about the outcomes. What can we do to get the outcome to favor the partisan agenda at hand? And I think people are seeing through it more and more. They've just pushed it too far. The tissue has become too thin, and people can see through it.
I think there's an angst under the surface. The people know things are wrong, and that there are going to be a lot more thin-skinned about the shenanigans they've overlooked just because, well, that's too much trouble to bother with. I don't even want to.
Very strange. The Democrats, and again, I don't mean to simply demonize the Democrats, because when the Republicans are in charge, they're Democrat light. They do a lot of the same bad things, even though they use rhetoric that sounds nicer to those of us who favor freedom. So let's not say it's just the Democrats. But nonetheless, for heaven's sakes, do they really think we can put a tax on energy to increase everybody's electric bill and put in this health care plan, which is a loss leader system, and it will leave you some freedom for now, and it won't cost you much for now. We'll just offer you the free stuff for now, and you can pay the real bills later. How do they think they can do all this when people are already suffering and economically, and people are looking around going, wait a minute, this is all based on the Chinese and the Indians buying our bonds and loaning us money. It can't last forever. They can't stop. They keep pushing themselves. When you really need a John Kennedy to come in and cut tax rates and cut spending, there was a surplus under John Kennedy that he inherited from the Republican administration of Dwight Eisenhower. Look what they've done in the past 50 years of the supposed dream of Camelot.
And it's almost like they act like there's not a paper trail that will haunt them historically. That's the amazing thing to me. It's not like they're not going to get caught. And they keep going and they keep going and then they just poo-poo it. I was looking at an interview with Rahm Emanuel, and he was talking about compulsory service, you know, the citizen army, and everybody's got to serve 3 months and stuff. I was looking at this guy and going, my God, does he really believe this stuff? I mean, it was like a little Nazi sitting there saying, you will serve your country because you got to sacrifice. And I'll guarantee you John Kennedy's phrase is going to come back, you know, ask not and all that stuff. It's going to come back, and it's going to come out of the new martyr's lips.
Look at the strange desperation. I mean, the collectivists, how could they have more control in this country? They've got a president, a very handsome, articulate young president. He doesn't have much depth. He doesn't have much experience in private industry, the military, any of the places that people usually get trained for leadership. But nonetheless, he's an attractive, dapper, well-spoken, very left-wing president. The Democrats control both houses of Congress by considerable margins. They're starting to appoint more collectivists who favor affirmative action and so forth, these very out-of-date leftist remedies to the Supreme Court. How could they be more powerful? So why is it that they panic and reveal themselves, Harry Reid calling people hate mongers, and he's talking about average Joes, middle class, many of them senior citizens, showing up for a really rather inarticulate protest at these tea parties and some of these town halls where these congressmen try to go back to their district. And these people are not threatening to kill anyone. They're not really revolutionists. They're just people who are going, hey, you can't keep spending money this way. We're not idiots. It's like the family budget if you sat down and said, well, okay, we're not quite paying our bills, so let's undertake some big new spending plan. Let's go buy a fancy new car.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't
buy the
Rolls.
Anybody sitting around the kitchen table would know that that doesn't work.
Sometimes you just shake your head and say, how
do
they do it?
Why do you see so much hatred towards Rush Limbaugh and talk radio and anybody who stands up against their agenda and says the emperor has no clothes? Their panic when anyone challenges them, and their need to then stuff these meetings with SEIU, government employee union types, who will literally beat up anyone who protests or just keep them outside, not let them in the door. Why are they so desperate?
Isn't that funny? Because you're right. It's an obvious where they are hyper protective of putting out their propaganda. And it really is kind of amazing the overkill extent to which they go. They just don't stop. They want to hammer it in to the point where it just becomes a dunning noise, I think, to many people. They just tune it out. They don't hear it at all.
It becomes very revealing. If you can't really defend what you're doing, then you can't afford to let people articulate objections and answer them in a civil way. What's the answer? How do you explain why we're going to tax people more, tax you double, triple your electric bill by taxing the production of energy? It's during a very bad economic recession, which they caused. It would be hilarious if we didn't have to try to buy our pizza.
Exactly. And the funny thing was, in that interview I saw with Rahm Emanuel, he would not answer a question when they started getting on the stuff that would naturally, you know, as a candidate, I've certainly had questions that made me a little uncomfortable. He was more than a little uncomfortable about his own tax situation, how he, taxes. But he would not answer a straight question. He wouldn't give you a straight answer. And the interviewer seemed to, he actually went after him a little bit on some things, but then he would let him slide off without ever having answered the question directly. That blew my mind. I mean, where I would be needling him until I said, all right, look, if we have to go here, a little simple kidsy, then how about a yes or a no? How about that? Make it clear. And that, well, you know, we just got to look over that sort of situation and make sure it doesn't happen again. And he's just talking in platitudes. And you're going, well, hey, what? Are you going to answer the freaking question? It is frustrating to me to watch him.
Oh, it's interesting. I wouldn't hold up the British system as perfect, but when they have questioning the prime minister, it's pretty intense, and they may be laughing back and forth about it, but it's harsh questioning, and they don't let the guy off. They keep asking the same question until it gets some kind of an answer. And here, yes, there's a deference to authority, a feeling maybe that if you're a political reporter for one of these, whether it's a major newspaper, wire service, television network, you have to go a little gentle on these guys because you want to maintain your access.
Right.
And you don't want your bosses to say, you know, we don't want to go that harsh on the people in charge in this country, so maybe you need to man the North Dakota Bureau for a while. Now, they all want to get invited back to the same cocktail parties.
Exactly.
And get the same leaked stories. They take turns leaking stories to each reporter to keep them sweet so that, you know, you'll be reasonably nice to these people because they're your sources. You don't want them to clam up and treat you like they treated Hunter Thompson. You know, they didn't want him at their gatherings because he was a troublemaker.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny when you talk about how the MPs question the prime minister. Man, some of them, they just get right down in their knickers about it, too. And the fun part about the British Parliament is they have far better educated people who have a much greater command of the English language. And man, they just slap the silliness out of the prime minister or whoever. I saw Blair taking a couple of rafts of it. And it was just, it was so amusing. But it was at the same time so poignant. I mean, they weren't just slaps just to, you know, slice and cut and make them bleed. They were actually pointed statements that had substance to them. Here, of course, you know, you hear about all these guys on C-SPAN just flapping their trap about, well, the great state of Arkansas, blah, blah, blah. They just go on into the platitudes, and nothing ever gets said. So I do appreciate the British system. I'm glad you brought that up.
We used to elect presidents. We used to choose leaders, whether they did a great job or whether they were collectivist or not. We could argue about that, but at least they were seasoned. They were people who had been military commanders, or at least Harry Truman had sold shirts. They'd worked for some business where you had to sell a product and cover the payroll every week. They'd had some experience, and at least in Washington, your Lyndon Johnsons knew how the system worked and knew what was accomplishable and knew how to work with Congress. Now, particularly the Democratic Party brings us these, they're handsome young teddy bears, I think it started with John Kennedy, but Bill Clinton certainly was a handsome, likable rogue, and now you look at Barack Obama, but they have no real depth. You wonder where they're coming from. They seem to believe their own rhetoric, and in the power of rhetoric to change the real world. It's not working anymore.
Yeah, but so often we find these, and there's even the term, the limousine liberals, that had come out of it because they seldom do what they say they do. I mean, it's just so, it's a frustrating circumstance when these guys, well, you remember Arianna Huffington and the whole thing about nobody in the whole world should drive an SUV, and of course the next event she shows up is a convoy of SUVs. That she's out there burning all the gas. You know, you just go, come on, come on. Will somebody be real? And then, of course, we got our good friend Ron Paul came on the scene. And what a startling and sterling difference that we saw, because he is what he says he is.
I'm afraid, Barry, the old saying is that people get the government they deserve. We keep electing these characters. And the problem, you poll the American populace and they say Congress stinks. You say, well, then why don't you get rid of your individual congressman? Oh, not my congresswoman.
Yeah.
She helped me with my problem with the bureaucracy there. Her constituent service, oh, no, she's good. And you see the same thing with these vastly overfunded government schools that are turning out dysfunctional graduates that can't even count change or find Moscow on a map. And so you tell people, let's close the government schools. Give people back all that money they spend in taxes to support the government schools. Let them homeschool. Let them develop a private school network where they could, the government schools as a whole may suck, but my school and my individual right. child's teacher, she's a wonderful woman who loves children. So we still fall for this judging people on their intentions. The school teacher intends to do well by the children. She loves the children. Mm-hmm. My congresswoman is trying to help me with my problem with the bureaucracy, even though she voted for the bill that created the bureaucracy. And we get the government we deserve. Why don't people throw this stuff out? I can't really explain it.
It's almost to the point where you got to say, we've got to collapse the entire thing and rebuild. There's no part of it that is not tainted by corruption in some way.
It's a frustrating remedy because we'd have to live through the chaos and people would suffer to some extent, but I agree.
Yeah, but there's going to be suffering without.
Germany at the end of the Second World War, the way they got rid of price controls was very interesting. They just declared there'll be an end to the price controls. Tomorrow there'll be a free market, and everybody thought there would be chaos under Ludwig Erhard, I think, is who did that a few years after the Second World War. And lo and behold, you wake up the next morning, everything's working. Nobody starved.
It's just amazing. Yeah, I think people acclimate. I have more faith in us as a people or as individuals to buck up and acclimate to the situation. The problem is the situation keeps changing. They keep moving the target on us. I mean, people put away for their retirement, for instance, and son of a gun, now it's all gone. And now what?
Well, you're talking about stock market crashes, which
But we're going to talk about it right after the break. We'll have 5 minutes after the break, Vin. I apologize, but I know
that's all right.
They're going to slam me here in about 2 seconds.
Happy to join you, Barry.
Well, it's always great to have you on. Folks, we'll be back on Declare Your Independence with me, your host, Barry Hess, sitting in for Ernest Hancock.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. This is Barry Hess on Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence. Our guest is Vin Soprinowicz, editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and he's back with us for the final segment. Vin, are you with us?
I seem to still be here. I got to go get some of my hemp coffee, though. I think I need some of that.
Have some brownies with that, all right?
you've got some advertisers.
There you go. I get a kick out of that commercial, too. It's funny. We had Bob Poldowski on, and he was a physicist and a psychoanalyst, and I had talked with him, and I wasn't sure what kind of interview we were going to have. The guy was fascinating anal retentive in his writings, but he had come up with 12 comforting lies that the American people believe. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but I just want to mention they were going in line with what you were just talking about, was that number five was that government, that all government servants are honest, they're wise, and they're caring. That was one. The other one goes hand in hand, and it was that government works always in the best interest of the public. And isn't that funny? Because people, they're obvious mistruths, yet there are things that people actually believe. What do you think of the psychosis behind that?
It's a faith that I think people need so that they can feel comfortable. Otherwise, the world threatens you with chaos, and you want to see order. You want to hope that government's there to help us. There's certainly enough of it around. We had an incident down there in Phoenix a couple weeks ago. Barack Obama was in town, and some folks, Ernie and some of the other guys who frequently go to these public gatherings and exercise their right to carry arms, they got a military rifle or a sidearm safely slung, no problem. And the police are there, and they know they're going to be there, and everything's fine. But we had a columnist in our own paper write, "Oh, my God, someone had a gun right outside the building where the president was. Oh, they're threatening to shoot the president. This is a threat. And I would be so terrified to see someone with a gun. How do you know they're not insane?" Well, isn't it interesting? You ask these people, well, when you walk into a police station, are you terrified because many people there have guns? Or when you drive onto a military reservation, we've got the Nellis Air Force Base here in town, and you know a lot of people there have guns. Oh, no, that's fine because they've been authorized by the government to have guns. So that's fine. This notion that our fellow citizens would kill us because they're insane. But as long as the people with a gun are from the government, everything's fine. Well, down through history, if someone's going to knock on your door and take your stuff, it's more likely somebody with a uniform from the government. But that's not the way we look at things. People like to have police because they make them feel safe. We don't trust our neighbors, but we trust the government. It's a very, you just called it a psychosis, and it's something close to that. And I think the best answer was given by John Taylor Gatto, a wonderful guy, writes some books on the public schools. He was the New York School Teacher of the Year. He talks about, this is all refuted by universal motoring. You're walking down the side of a country road, there are cars coming towards you. In the course of an hour, as you walk down the road, maybe 400 cars come by you, passing within 2 or 3 feet of you. If any one of those total strangers just turned the wheel of their car, they could run you down and kill you. So do we cower in the woods and we're terrified? Oh, my God, there are those people out there driving cars. They could kill me at any time. And what if one of them's insane? No. You assume that everybody driving by you down the street is probably reasonably sane, and they have no reason to kill you because they'd go to prison if they did. You know, unless they have a heart attack and they accidentally veer off the road, you want to show a little defensive driving skills or walking skills. But we're not terrified of each other in those everyday situations. And yet, this notion, oh, if the person walking down the aisle in the supermarket had a gun on his hip and I suddenly realized he's not a government policeman, that's terrible. He could be insane. He could kill me. Yeah, how do we get propagandized with this level of fear for our fellow man? It's very strange.
It is extremely strange. But, you know, it's funny. We heard about the incident down here. Actually, you know, Ernie was involved, at least to the extent of interviewing Chris when he came in. But the real big thing was it was a black man with a gun. That just blew their minds out here. We have the bumper music here. Looks like it's coming in. I don't know why it's coming in.